Welcome back to Museums and Chill. Today's episode is a special one as we are celebrating International Museum Day. Since 1977, the International Council of Museums has annually organized IMD on the 18th of May as museums around the world come together to highlight their incredible work. This year's theme is Museums for Education and Research. Museums are treasure troves of knowledge and inspiration as they can spark curiosity, challenge our perspectives, and even help us solve problems facing our world today. Every year, ICOM prepares different tools for people around the world to be able to celebrate with us and with all museums globally. One of these tools is Interactive Map, where we invite all museums to register their IMD events. And at the moment, we have over 8,000 events, so don't hesitate to visit our website at imd.icom.museum to find an event near you and celebrate with us. We also offer a communications kit for museums and museum professionals to inspire themselves to create activities for IMD. This year, we have the additional invitation to record yourselves and share your own perspectives on this year's theme, Museums for Education and Research. Additionally, did you know that each year since 2020, the International Museum Day supports a set of goals from the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations? This year, we're focusing on Goal 4, Quality Education, and Goal 9, Industry, Innovation, and Infrastructure. As you know, museums are ambassadors to the well-being and to the sustainable development of our communities. And as trusted institutions, they are uniquely placed to create a cascading effect to foster positive change. So thank you to all museums around the globe for their efforts on this International Museum Day. We wish you all the best. And now, without further ado, welcome to Museums and Chill, a podcast by the International Council of Museums, where we talk everything museums. This is Ana Paula from ICOM, and for today's episode, we have invited Heidi McKinnon, founder of Curators Without Borders, a nonprofit dedicated to design and implement dynamic and participatory educational exhibitions, outreach, and advocacy campaigns for underserved communities worldwide in partnership with nonprofits, museums, and cultural institutions. Welcome, Heidi, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Could you tell us about Curators Without Borders and how it was created?
Of course. Curators Without Borders started a little over 10 years ago after I returned to the United States from Guatemala. I had been doing some work in Guatemala with an indigenous nonprofit, and I was also developing an exhibition and traveling an exhibition on the human right to water. And it was a really powerful experience because we were touring the exhibition in extremely rural communities in Guatemala. The entire tour reached about 100,000 people, and I was able to do tours with over 5,000 students throughout the year that we toured the exhibition. And what I was seeing in every one of the venues that we visited was that students were writing down every word that they could from our text panels because it was information that they didn't necessarily have access to, and they weren't used to seeing educational materials in this kind of a traveling exhibition format. So it was very powerful for them. In one of the communities, when I was deinstalling the exhibition, there were students with notebooks still writing down the text, even though there were no photos there. They were just trying to capture everything. And literally from every venue we visited, I have photographs of students doing the exact same thing, just reading and copying all the text because they were really engaged. In some communities, the materials that we were discussing really related to their daily lives because they were facing the possibility of the construction of a hydroelectric dam, or they were facing mining concerns, things like that that affected their water quality. Some communities in the Guatemala City area who visited the exhibition didn't have running water. They had water that was being trucked in every other week. So seeing the stories that we were telling in the exhibition really had an impact on them. And so when I came back to the U.S. after that experience, having worked previously at the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian, I felt like maybe my best use, or the best use of my skills and my time, would be to try to follow that path and bring all of the information and the educational materials and the knowledge that we have in our institutions into different settings. And that's sort of how we began to focus on the learning kiosk and developing this idea of an educational program that would work directly with refugee children who had no access to education.
That sounds amazing. As many people may know, this year's International Museum Day, it's Museums for Education and Research. And so this is why we have Heidi today, because she's been working a lot with education and museums. And so I would like to ask you, how does Curators Without Borders utilize education and research for your programs with local communities?
Well, most of my career has involved collaborations with communities and developing exhibitions and programmings in collaboration. And what I would say is that I believe we need to focus on ensuring that we level the playing field in terms of access to the highest quality educational experiences that we can offer students worldwide. My mother went to great lengths to ensure that I attended the best schools in the community where I grew up in the U.S. And I would like to set the intention that every child has access to the highest quality educational experiences and materials, no matter where they are in the world, including the most remote refugee camp on the planet. And that's basically my mission. So I believe that our museum educators create dynamic experiential programming for our school groups and our visitors. And so that work is already done. It exists. It's out there. And all we need to do is create the connections and maybe reframe and disseminate these materials more broadly. And so that's where the learning kiosk comes in. And that's, you know, one of the main programs of my organization. And our mission is to be sort of that link between the museum sector and then the humanitarian and international development arenas to expand the diffusion of our museum resources in ways that impact the lives of our most vulnerable children.
Right. And then you're talking about this kiosk for learning. Could you tell us about it?
Sure. Well, the learning kiosk it's basically a standalone space, a small little kiosk that would be deployed within either peri-urban environments or refugee camps. And there would be sort of distributed throughout a camp. And the experience would be like walking into a classroom, but we just don't have enough brick and mortar schools in these kinds of locations. I mean, internationally, worldwide, we have right now about 250 million out-of-school children. That number has doubled in the past couple of years, just in a few years over that period of the pandemic. And so we're never going to have enough brick-and-mortar schools. We're never going to have enough teachers for every classroom. And we have to find other options. So the learning kiosk is a space where during the day students, children, or children and their parents can come into these spaces and experience what might look like a little bit of a traveling exhibition. You would have panels, you would have interactive spaces. Depending on the availability, there could be, you know, multimedia components as well. There could be 3D printed objects. So we want it to be as experiential as possible, but essentially you would have panels that would change out every week or depending on the lesson plan that you're working on, and different kiosks devoted to specific subjects. But the main concept is that all of the materials would be culturally relevant. So working with all of our ethnographic museums around the world have collections related to a particular community, say Somali communities in Ethiopia. That's a project that I have been working on most frequently. So you would take digital assets mostly from museum collections and turn them into lesson plans related to literacy, numeracy, what have you, but all culturally relevant. And obviously we know the healing power of objects. We know sort of the psychosocial support mechanisms that museums offer. We're talking about that more and more in the past few years. So this is an extension of that, because children in these situations are generally dealing with some form of PTSD that, you know, all of the communities in these camps have a certain level of trauma. So you have to also take that into account. And given the focus in the emergency education field on social emotional learning, on psychosocial support, it's kind of a win-win and a really reasonable linkage between what museums are doing and how we're thinking about our educational experiences and museums as places of therapy and the healing power of objects and all of the components that the emergency educational field is bringing into play for children in these situations. So the kiosk would be a standalone space. The children would go in with a parent or not and go through the lesson plans. It's self-directed learning, and the lesson plans would change over time, like you would change panels for an exhibition. And basically that's the general concept, and then there are lots of other elements that are involved as well, but that's the basics.
Thank you for sharing that, because it sounds incredibly interesting and of course useful. And as you're mentioning, Curators Without Borders tackles complex social issues like refugee education and human rights. Could you elaborate on how museums through education and research can empower these communities and contribute to finding solutions?
Well, honestly, I can't think of a higher purpose for our collections than to support displaced persons in maintaining a connection to their cultural heritage. So as a museum community, we've successfully expanded the definition of a museum to encompass a more holistic view of the role of our institutions in society. And as my career has focused on human rights and social justice issues to a great extent, I would say that I'm working to expand our definition of what the educational role of a museum should be within our wider society moving forward. I believe our museums are the repositories of important cultural heritage directly related to millions of displaced people around the world. And it should be part of our duty to rethink how we can activate these collections that can impact the lives of people who are facing climate migration, displacement, and war, which is devastating the lives of so many families around the world. So I think this approach comes from my experiences working in these communities that I mentioned, sort of like my experience in Guatemala. And I view the educational experiences that children have in museums as sort of like a peak in their school year. You know, it's a really exciting moment for a child to have that museum trip, and they're looking forward to it. And I think that object-based learning is so experiential and formative in ways that enhance the classroom experience. So the idea of focusing on humanitarian education and specifically emergency education in refugee settings happened because it's, you know, this is a discrete population with very specific needs. And given the numbers that I mentioned, you know, 250 million out-of-school children, that's kind of an overwhelming number. How would the museum sector address that kind of a crisis? It's just not possible. But we have a group of about 200,000 out of school children in these refugee settings, where, you know, access to education is just so tenuous. So that's a number that's more manageable. It's a population where we can begin to make a difference within the wider humanitarian crisis of out-of-school children by creating these, you know, culturally relevant lesson plans and based on ethnographic collections, based on scientific research and the educational resources that already exist. So it's basically just a matter of gathering resources and committing to helping the increasing number of displaced populations to maintain meaningful connections to certain aspects of their traditional culture that may not be available to them within these acute, protracted refugee settings.
Thank you. Many museums struggle to make their collections and research accessible to diverse audiences. How does Curators Without Borders work with museums to bridge this gap and ensure their educational and research resources are reaching the communities who need them the most?
Well, the entire point of the Learning Kiosk is to take research findings, digital collections, educational strategies within the museum sector and repurpose them to serve in these acute educational needs settings around the world. So the Learning Kiosk curriculum is being designed to work with museums and cultural institutions to use their digital assets, their research findings, and potentially, you know, any media resources depending on the availability of, well, just depending on the access to electricity and what have you in a particular camp setting. So we're developing lesson plans that help children not only learn, but help them address the trauma of displacement through this healing power of the object, the healing power of maintaining access to your culture, et cetera, et cetera. When I worked at the Smithsonian, one of the projects that I was engaged in on a regular basis with all the communities that we worked with was a form of intellectual repatriation. All of the research that we gathered, all of the assets that we had in the collections, we constantly shared binders of all of our research with the community, so they had what we had. And that form of intellectual repatriation sort of basically has informed what I'm trying to do today. There are elements of that in the work that we're doing with the Learning Kiosk. And I would say when communities are at their most vulnerable, living in marginal conditions, what better moment could there possibly be to ensure and reinforce their connections to their land or their culture, or their history, than through educational opportunities that are based on the collections and research of the institutions that serve as repositories of their heritage? That's where I come from. That's what I believe.
Thank you for sharing that. I think it's quite powerful. Look into the future. How can museums leverage education and research to become even more relevant and impactful forces in society? What role can Curators Without Borders play in this?
Well, we have to find creative ways to share our research with wider audiences and communities, especially scientific research. Students and teachers, I think they need to really kind of normalize these interactions with researchers. We have, in my country, such a backlash against science that I believe it would be mitigated by more direct access to scientists and researchers and our curators. And so my hope would be that every school group meets a curator, meets a researcher, as well as the museum ed team during their visits. I mean, that's obviously not always possible, but, you know, it should always be a goal because those kids need that interaction, you know? They need that spark for their curiosity and even, you know, to develop a sense of wonder around the research that's being done in our institutions. And I believe those interactions really help students envision their own future. And that to me is priceless. You know, even if you're only touching one or two students in a visit or, you know, in a month, those interactions change the course of their lives, and we just need to remember that.
I think it's a very interesting take in a sense of you wouldn't necessarily directly think that it's the staff of a museum. Of course, it's not just staff, the structure of a museum that can be the most impactful. Probably someone thinks right away it's a piece of art or an object, as you're saying, with the power of objects. But how important it is actually to remind us that people within museums are also powerful and are also quite important to bring.
We have no idea how powerful, you know, our interactions can be.
Exactly. And Curators Without Borders work extensively with nonprofit partners. How do you ensure these partnerships leverage the educational and research capabilities of both museums and nonprofits to deliver impactful programs?
Well, I believe it really has to be built into the framework of those collaborations for both organizations. When I was working on one of our last project, one of the largest projects we've done in terms of developing museums, has been the creation of the Museum of Freedom and Human Rights in Panama. And I worked there with a team to visit migrant camps in that the government had set up in the Darien Gap. So people who are coming across the mountains from Colombia into Panama, and then they sort of move north from there. And it to me, it was just so obvious that we needed to visit those communities and include their stories in the museum. It's just part of the story of Panama. It's part of their history. They're an important transit point. And we just needed to capture that and do some work there. But it was it's a bit of a negotiation with the nonprofit that manages the museum, that developed the museum. We had to really kind of buy into the idea that we were going to take a lot of time to do this. And so in those collaborations, I think you just have to advocate for developing the research components and embedding them in the project from the beginning, because there's just no substitute. And what I would like to say is it's the nature of what we do in museums. We explore our world, document and protect what we can, and we share that knowledge we have gained with our communities in innovative and meaningful ways that are meant to enhance their lives and their lived experience. And what else are we here to do?
Yeah. So we've come to the last part of the podcast, which is called Rapid Fire Questions, because we ask our guests for a few short questions to learn more about them and to learn more about the subject that we're treating. So could you tell us, what's your favorite museum or a museum that you would like to visit that actually is doing great in practices of what you've been working towards?
Well, I love the Aleutic Museum in Alaska. It's a very small museum on an island at the beginning of the Aleutic chain. And I mean, I'm sure many people know about their work, but I had the privilege of visiting many years ago, probably over 20 years ago. And I would say it was one of the museums that impacted me most because of the stories. And they were speaking directly to the community. I was learning so much about the Aleutic community from this one room. And it was really the way the stories were shared in the first person, in connection with the objects that they chose to include in that particular exhibition. I don't remember if it was a permanent exhibition or not, but I was definitely impacted. And that experience, I think I carried that through my work at American Indian as well. The experience of that, first person narrative and sharing the story directly with a community. So I would say the Aleutic Museum is one of my favorites.
Thank you for that recommendation. I'm sure we will all love to go and visit it. Could you share with us a tool to read more about what education and museums can do together? Either a book, a movie, a documentary, whatever you can think of.
Well, this may sound slightly tangential, but I really appreciate, in terms of our work, this book called Museum Objects, Health and Healing. It has sort of case studies from different pilot projects to look at this connection between objects and healing. And I think it's really useful for all museum ed people to read if they get a chance. It just gives you some insights into the power of what you're doing, essentially.
And lastly, can you tell us what your plans are for International Museum Day?
For International Museum Day, I am going to visit our history museum here in downtown Santa Fe, the New Mexico History Museum, because I always enjoy seeing their collections and seeing what they have going on. And it's attached to one of the buildings that it's called the Palace of the Governors, and it's actually one of the oldest buildings in the United States. I believe construction began, maybe around 1610, when the conquistadors sort of entered this area of northern New Mexico. And I mean, very fraught history in this region of the world. But I just really appreciate everything that they do. So I'm going to go support my history museum on International Museum Day.
That sounds amazing. International Museum Day is for everyone everywhere. So now we have actually come to the end of our episode. So thank you, Heidi, for being here and for sharing all of these initiatives and information regarding museums and education within your nonprofit Curators Without Borders. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of Museums and Chill. We hope you enjoyed the conversation, and we wish everyone an amazing International Museum Day. Bye.